Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Week 4 preview episode of the Bears Talk Underground is brought to you by MyBookie. Hey, guys, did you get in on the action for tonight's Thursday night game? Philly and Green Bay, did you bet against the Packers hoping that Philly would give them their first loss? If you did, congratulations, because that's why I go to MyBookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay when you win. And let's face it, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on, and I wouldn't be telling you about these guys if they weren't the best. So do the smart thing. If you're going to bet football this season, bet with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy that also likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you multiply your winnings, and no matter how you bet, the NFL is the best time of year to do so. And you aren't just limited to the NFL, guys. MyBookie also has college football, MLB, the playoffs are coming up, MMA, and so much more. Join now, and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code CHAIR to activate the offer. That's promo code CHAIR, C-H-A-I-R. Visit mybookie.ag today, because at MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. And it was an exciting night tonight. The Bears and the Vikings now, the stakes are even higher because they have a shot at first place. They can be tied for first place because they both lost to Green Bay, so Green Bay will have the head-to-head edge. But it's an opportunity to inch closer to taking over the division. It was a big division game to begin with. Now the stakes are a little higher thanks to Philly beating Green Bay tonight. Now Green Bay's 3-1, and the winner of this game on Sunday will also be 3-1. My guest today on the show, Chris Gates, our good friend from SB Nation's Daily Norseman, to help us preview the game. Had a great conversation with Chris. We went down memory lane talking about some of the insanity that we've seen in this rivalry. We talked a lot about the home and home situation between the Bears and the Vikings, and it's a fun series. It is a fun series because it's one of the only series in the NFL that I'm aware of where home field advantage seems to almost be like the most important factor. And that was the part of the conversation that we had, because we talked about how sometimes some of the worst teams that the Bears put on the field were able to beat some of the Vikings' best in Soldier Field and vice versa in the Metrodome or TCF Bank Field or the U.S. Bank Arena or Stadium now in Minneapolis. So it's a weird rivalry, or weird circumstance that the home field advantage actually seems to apply to these teams. So had a great talk with Chris, but before we get to that, we got plenty to get to. It's the Week 4 preview episode of the Bears Talk Underground, so let's get to it. With the Thursday night game between Green Bay and Philadelphia, it's the beginning of week number 4, which means the first quarter of the season is almost already behind us. You know, we complain all off season long. You know, we feel like that 6 months takes forever from February to August before we get to see preseason games and everything. And then once it finally gets here, and after that month of August with all those boring, meaningless preseason games, we get to the meaningful ones in September. And then they just start rattling them off. Before you know it, we're going to be in midseason. The playoff talk is going to start up soon. And then the season will be over already, and we can go back to complaining for another 6 months about how much we miss football. What's going on, everybody? Larry D back for the Week 4 preview episode of the Bears Talk Underground. Chris Gates, our good friend from SB Nation's Daily Norseman, will be joining us here in just a few moments to help preview this matchup between our two historic franchises. Had a really great talk with Chris this time around. We really dove deep into the whole home and home thing with the Bears and the Vikings and the crazy games that have taken place, the rare times that Minnesota has won in Chicago, some of the Bears' biggest victories in the rivalry, and things like that. It was a lot of fun. Probably the best conversation I feel like I've had with Chris on the show. So I hope you guys enjoy that. But before we get to that, we got a couple of news and notes. The Bears made a couple of roster moves this week. I forgot to mention that on Monday, they actually waived, maybe I mentioned it in the review episode, but they waived Bradley Sole to make room for Abdullah Anderson to be signed back onto the roster to, you know, I guess fill the hole left behind by Bilal Nichols and his broken hand. He did not play Monday night against the Redskins. So it appeared, for the moment anyway, that the Bradley Sole experiment at tight end was over, because we signed P.J. Foltz, Holtz last week, just in case Burton wasn't going to be ready to go against the Broncos, which, of course, he was. And then, but fast forward to, I think, today or yesterday, one of the two, Wednesday or Thursday, and the Bears re-signed Bradley Sole and waived Kareth White Jr. So the extra running back on the roster is now over, and maybe we'll sign him to the practice squad or something like that. The Bears did invest the draft pick in Kareth White. He did initially make the roster, so we'll see what happens. Because I think it happened today, so I haven't heard whether or not he cleared waivers yet, probably because it did happen today on Thursday. I'm pretty sure it was today, Thursday, so forgive me. So we'll probably find out sometime tomorrow if the Bears will sign him to the practice squad to hang on to him, and then see whose job on the practice squad he'd be taking, because we're at the full – well, actually, we have a spot open on the practice squad now, because Abdullah Anderson was on the practice squad, signed to the 53-man roster to play on Monday, so and we never filled that spot. So maybe that's what Kareth White is going to do. So the carousel continues as Abdullah comes to the practice squad. Bradley Sole was unemployed for a few days. Now he's back on the team, and now Kareth White, I would say, is the likely candidate to take that 10th practice squad slot. So that's the little musical chairs that the Bears did with their roster in the last couple of days. And really the only other news going on with the Bears right now is that there's been a lot of talk about the jerseys, the uniforms that the Bears are wearing this week against the Vikings. They are wearing the throwbacks, the 1936 stripy outfit uniform that they unveiled at the 100-year celebration back in June. And it was, you know, I have mixed feelings about it, guys. You know this about this. You know this about me, the whole uniform snob thing. And, you know, it's I'm interested to see what it looks like on the field. I'm interested to see what it looks like in mass instead of just one person on a stage, like when Kyle Fuller came out wearing it on at the celebration in June. What it looks like when everybody's out there. I think it'd be weird to see the Bears wearing white at home. That'll be strange. You know, I don't think that the helmets would be too big a distraction. It's all going to be about the socks. Can I get past the socks? Can I sit and watch the socks run around the field for 3 hours? Because that's definitely, like, in a, you know, in a nutshell, what I hate about the uniform.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You know, I actually like the jersey. Can't go wrong with the straight up navy blue pants. The helmet is kind of meh, kind of got that Michigan thing almost going on with the stripes on the helmet. So, you know, I can take it or leave it with the helmet. I'm not in love with it, but I don't hate it. Love the jersey. Can't get mad at the pants. And then we get to the socks. And yeah, I've already talked about that extensively. I even dabble in the conversation with Chris as well. So, but the controversy behind the uniforms being that back in 1936 is during a time when basically there was an unspoken ban on black football players in the NFL. Like the owners were, you know, not allowing black players into the league. And this is so it's like by wearing that jersey, we're kind of celebrating that era and things like that. The Bears have gone out of their way this week to kind of to like why they're bringing this particular era, this uniform to light. Cause the uniform that we're wearing on Sunday is a version of that uniform that we wore in 36 and only in 1936. Like we had different uniforms in 37 and going forward and things like that. It was kind of more like kind of shedding a light on maybe a down period in the league. And, you know, I guess by bringing this uniform out, using that as a way of showing that something like this won't happen again in the future, obviously. But that, you know, things have changed and this is a step in the right direction. We're not, you know, maybe not necessarily celebrating the 1936 team, but more like, you know, wearing that uniform and, you know, the majority of our team is, you know, our black players, having them wear the uniform they weren't allowed to wear back in those days. So I guess that's more of the positive spin the Bears are trying to put on it. And, you know, who knows? We'll see. I mean, it could have been something that was all controversy. The Bears did everything they could to get out in front of it so it didn't become a thing, you know. So I think they did a great job with that so it won't be a distraction, something that the players get bothered with this week or anything like that. So I'm interested to see these uniforms in action because just sitting there, you know, looking at Tariq Cohen and Kyle Fuller, you know, posing in a studio with the uniform on, is one thing, but how will it look when it's on the field in mass? So interested to see how that goes. Finally, we have our injury report. And boy, were we spoiled last year, man. We were spoiled last year. Because remember last year, it's like, you know, when we had three guys on the injury report, it was like, oh, dear God, the sky is falling. Well, this week in practice, we have 11 guys on the injury report for this week. Let's start with Trey Burton, nursing that groin injury. He has been full go on Wednesday and Thursday, step in the right direction. Mike Davis has not practiced yet this week, listed as personal, so it's not an injury, but he hasn't practiced yet. Taylor Gabriel and Akeem Hicks. Gabriel with his concussion, Hicks with his knee injury. Neither has practiced yet this week. Same thing goes for Bilal Nichols with his hand injury, Eddie Pinero with his knee injury. So Nagy thinks that you know, or he's hopeful, I guess, with Akeem Hicks. So I guess he's the one I think maybe is giving the Bears the most pause at the moment. Like as of today on Thursday in his afternoon press conference, Nagy has basically, you know, listed Akeem as day-to-day, and he will be a game-time decision on Sunday. So fingers crossed, guys. Let's pray to the football gods that he can play in this one because we're going to need Akeem. And, you know, we're going to talk to Chris about that quite a bit. And, you know, the strength of the Vikings offense right now is their running game, and Akeem's one of the best run stoppers in football. So we're going to need him on Sunday. In others, we got Eddie Jackson has been limited both days this week with the shoulder injury. Bobby Massey, who missed the game on Monday with the vertigo situation, has been full participation so far this week. So it sounds like he's going to be good to go for Sunday. Cordero Patterson was limited on Wednesday with a tricep injury, was full go today. Same thing with Roy Robertson Harris. He had a glute injury, so apparently he had a sore booty. Was limited on Wednesday, full go on Thursday. And I think that's it. But that's 10, 11 guys. Oh, sorry, Kyle Long. was he's the weirdest one on the list, actually, because he was full participation on Wednesday. They have him listed with a hip injury. He was full go on Wednesday, did not practice on Thursday. So I don't know if it was that, if it was one of those veteran days off things, because it wasn't listed as such. But to be full participation one day and then, you know, did not practice the next day stands out for sure in this on the injury report, especially since I'm looking at the one on the Chicago Bears app and it's showing like symbols for full participation, limited, did not practice, that kind of thing. And, you know, basically a full black dot means that you were full participation, but an empty circle with an X through it means you didn't practice at all. And that really kind of stands out when it comes to Kyle Long, because it's, you know, like limited for Patterson and Robertson Harris, but full go today, full go for Burton. Those black dots stand out, and that black dot stood out for Kyle Long, but on Wednesday, and then he's got the X on Thursday. So don't know what's going on there. I'm hoping that it just means that he got a veteran day off. They gave him a day of rest or whatever. Not that he re-aggravated that hip injury and didn't practice today, but we'll keep an eye on it as we go along, especially since, you know, I don't think there's anything to worry about. There hasn't been any indication that Gabriel won't play on Sunday. The Bears haven't been trying out kickers to replace Eddie Pinheiro. So I guess they're just letting him nurse the injury for now, and he's going to kick through it kind of like he did on Monday night. But he's also had almost a full week since the injury, so hopefully it's healing up for him. They're just having him take it easy. The Bears are very precautionary with their injuries more than anything. So maybe that's what it is for those two, because the headlines from Nagy's press conference today were about the Akeem Hicks and his knee and where he's at with that and will he be ready to go. And that's when the news came out that day-to-day he'll be a game-time decision. So we're going to be biting our nails right up into, you know, the Fox NFL Sunday or whatever on Sunday for Jay Glazer or, you know, Ian Rappaport to tell us that Akeem Hicks is in or out. So hopefully it goes our way, because we're going to need him on Sunday. So anyway, that's going to do it for our news and notes. What do we we'll go ahead and bring in our guest, Chris Gates from the Daily Norseman, to help us preview week number 4 between the Bears and the Vikings. But first, remember, guys, double your first deposit at MyBookie. You know, get that extra money to build up your bank when you're betting on pro football, the NCAA, MMA, UFC, Bellator, Major League Baseball. Hell, even hockey is getting close to, I think they're doing preseason games right now. Like, I get little Yahoo alerts about how the Blackhawks are doing. They got their asses kicked last night, like 6-2 or something like that. But nonetheless, if you want to get in on the action with MyBookie, use promo code CHAIR to double your first deposit at mybookie.ag, where you play, you win, you get paid. And also, the week 4 preview episode of the Bearsog Underground is brought to you by Blue Chew. Yay, we get to do Blue Chew ad again. Hooray. Let me pull up the copy. I wouldn't want to miss a single word of this. Oh, guys, let's have a talk, guys. You're in the bedroom. You're with your lady. You're not feeling up to it. She is. It's one of those rare times where she does and you don't and everything. So what are you going to do? You're going to pop a Blue Chew. You're going to be ready to go, because that's what Blue Chew does. You want to increase your performance and get that a little extra confidence? Then get you some Blue Chew. BlueChew.com, that's blue like the color, brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra, Cialis, so you know it works. Anytime you want to sit in separate bathtubs in a meadow on a hill looking out at nothing. Yeah, that's, yeah, same ingredients as that stuff. So you can take them anytime, day or night, on a full or empty stomach. And since they are chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, which is why you can just drop it when she's ready to go. And if you could benefit from a little extra function and more confidence where it counts, Blue Chew is the fast and easy way to enhance your performance. Blue Chew is prescribed online, shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. So no in-person doctor visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness, like being able to tell your lady, babe, I got a headache, and Because we all know that's not true. It's just not. We don't have headaches. Not when it comes to that. So right now we've got a special offer, a special deal for all our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code ARMCHAIR. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code ARMCHAIR to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. And we get to find out next week if they're going to keep sponsoring us, so I get to keep trying to figure out ways to enjoy myself talking about this. It's always a good time. Always a good time. So speaking of good times, Chris Gates from the Daily Norseman from SB Nation is back to help us preview week 4 between the Bears and the Vikings, a game that was, I talked to him Wednesday night, so it was before we knew about, the Packers getting their first loss. Now this game is a little bit higher stakes. It's a piece of first place for the winner. So without further ado, myself, Chris Gates, previewing week number 4, Bears-Vikings. Our beloved Chicago Bears close out the first quarter of 2019. Man, you can't wait for it to come, and then it just starts fleeting so fast. Week number 4 has our beloved hosting the Minnesota Vikings. The Bears returning home to the home crowd, hopefully to improve upon the disgrace that was week 1 against Green Bay. But our opponents for this big week 4 matchup, another NFC North rival, in the Minnesota Vikings, who are also 2-1 and playing decent football right now, and here to help us preview this very big matchup early on in the season, our good friend from SB Nation's Daily Norseman, Chris Gates. Chris, how are we doing?
Larry, my friend, I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Well, you know, I'm 2-1. You're 2-1. We got a big game coming up on Sunday. And even though we historically win this matchup, I'm a little iffy this time around, so I'm not quite as confident or optimistic as I was coming into the Sunday night game last year, so that's kind of what I'm living with right now.
Well, that makes two of us, because things are a little different than I think we were expecting from the Vikings at this point. I think a lot of folks probably expected us to be 2-1, but I'm not sure if they expected us to get there quite the way they got there. But yeah. 2-1 is 2-1, so we'll take it, I think.
I think it's a like a 6-1 and half a dozen in the other kind of thing. I think everyone expected the defense to be who they were, I'd say, in 2017, one of the better units in football, and that seems to be happening right now. I was just going through the stats a few moments ago, and you're literally like only one step behind the Bears in most statistical categories. Like, we have 11 sacks, you guys have 10. We have 4 interceptions, you have 3. We're number 3 in scoring defense, you guys are 5 or something like that. So the defense is playing really, really well. But I don't think that we expected the Vikings to go old school and average 190 yards a game rushing, especially when the crux of the conversation you and I had over the summer was concerns about the offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, the offensive line has still had their issues pass blocking at points over the first 3 games. But, yeah, Mike Zimmer said he wanted to run the football more, and by God, that's exactly what he's gotten over the last 3 games. Like you said, the Vikings are currently averaging, I believe it's 193 or 194 yards rushing a game. And through the first 3 games of last season, they had a grand total of 198 yards on the ground. So they're averaging per game through the first 3 weeks this year what they rushed for total in the first 3 weeks last year. And, you know, like I said, Mike Zimmer is an old school coach who wants to run the football, but I'm not sure if even he saw anything like this coming.
Yeah, total black and blue division, mentality there. Run the football, play good defense, and, you know, that's how you're going to win football games. It's a very 80s way of playing football, but it's working for the Vikings so far.
So far, yeah. I mean, you know, the offensive line, they get after people in the run game. I mean, Garrett Bradbury's struggles as a pass blocker have been pretty well documented, but as a run blocker, he's been solid. Brian O'Neill, Josh Klein has been a really pleasant surprise for us so far, even though he might not play on Sunday, depending on how the concussion protocol goes. But yeah, the run blocking after the disaster we saw last year has been a really pleasant surprise. And yeah, however this team wants to win football games, I think Vikings fans are okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, and Dalvin Cook coming out of the gates, the leading rusher in the league after 3 weeks, is just he's been outstanding so far. I was at a sports bar on Sunday with a buddy of mine watching the games, and I had my eye on Minnesota and Oakland, and just seemed like every time I turned my head, there was Dalvin Cook for another chunk of yards.
Yeah, and it's strange. I mean, he's gotten a lot of yardage so far, but he hasn't really gotten a ton of carries. I think he only had 16 or 17 carries in the game against Oakland, but he managed 110 yards. And, you know, he had a big run against the Packers. And, you know, we did a post a couple days ago because Gil Brandt from the NFL Network found this. I think he said Cook is the fifth player in history to have at least 110 yards rushing and a touchdown in his first three games of the season. And the other four guys are all Hall of Famers, which is which is pretty nice company for him to be in at this point. But yeah, we said all along, everybody that I talked to this offseason doing podcasts like yours or interviews with other places, I told everyone that would listen that Dalvin Cook is a difference maker when he's healthy. And, you know, he's finally healthy again for the first time since the start of his rookie season. And he's a difference maker. That offense is just completely different when he's out on the field.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing that everybody knew about Dalvin Cook. And, you know, he's one of those players that when he's on the field, he's electric. He, like you said, he's a difference maker. You know, he's a great back, and that's why the Vikings – was he a first-rounder or an early second-round guy?
No, he was a second-rounder.
Second-round guy, yeah.
The Vikings didn't have a first-rounder after the Bradford trade.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So he was your top pick. Maybe that's why I'm thinking – he was the first player that you took in that draft because you didn't have a first rounder.
Okay. I believe they did trade up a few spots to get him. I think they moved up from like the mid 40s to the upper 40s to pull up to grab him in the second round.
Yeah, but I guess
he was the first player that year.
Yeah, that's why I'm thinking he was a top pick because he was of that particular class, even though he wasn't a first rounder. But everybody's had that opinion of him. He did get off to a really great start his rookie year before a knee injury, I believe, his rookie season that took him out. And it was just like, if he gets out there, it's going to be great. And to see that finally happening has to be satisfying for Viking fans.
It really is because, yeah, he had the ACL tear in week 4 of 2017. And last year, I don't think he was ever really fully healthy between trying to rehab the ACL and probably overcompensating and winding up with other leg injuries. He was only available for 15 games in his first two seasons, but yeah, he's out there this year. He's healthy. He's catching passes. He's, like you said, he's leading the league in rushing. He was leading in rushing touchdowns until this past week when I think Mark Ingram passed him. But yeah, he's the Vikings offense is just a completely different thing with him on the field and everything you have to defend with him.
And how has that in any way been helpful to Cousins, or has it been helpful to him?
I think it has been to an extent. I mean, one of Cousins' big strengths is his ability in the play-action passing game, and obviously with Dalvin Cook out there and ripping off big chunks of yardage every time he touches the ball, it you know, gives the defense something more to think about. In the games against Atlanta and Oakland, I mean, obviously not as much in the Atlanta game because he only threw 10 passes, but this past week against Oakland, guys were falling for play action and guys were running open the entire game. The Green Bay game, and I actually expect this is what we're going to see more of in Chicago, they'd run the play action and the Packers weren't biting on it. I mean, they three or four times they tried to run the fake handoff with the bootleg action for Cousins, and every time he faked that handoff, the contain guy on the other side wasn't biting on it, and Cousins would have a guy in his face just immediately. But yeah, you can get away with that stuff against teams like Oakland, and I don't think you're going to see that quite as much against Chicago because they're just that much more talented and more disciplined defensively than some of these other teams the Vikings have played.
Yeah, I'm interested in how that matchup is going to shake out, because once again this year, the Bears are stifling against the run. They allowed 47 yards against Green Bay. I think the Broncos weren't much better than that. I think Washington came away with like 30 or 40 something yards rushing on Monday night, but we also got off to a big lead, so they had to throw a lot more in the second half. But I'm interested to see if strength against strength, which one's going to bend and or break on Sunday.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. I don't know if the Vikings are going to be able to run for 180 or 200 yards or whatever, but I mean, they're damn sure going to try, I think, and because that's just the way the offense has gone so far. Everything has been predicated off the run game, and the couple of games the Vikings have won, they've gotten off to 21-0 leads, and against Green Bay they got down 21-0 and struggled a little bit. So they need to get off to a fast start, and we're gonna have to see if that happens. And it's gonna be an interesting matchup, that's for sure. It always is with these two teams.
Yeah, so it's been a season of extremes so far for the Vikings. They're either getting off to a fast start or they've gotten far behind early on, and I think that's probably what cost you more than likely the game in Green Bay, was you basically had to abandon the game plan because you're down 3 touchdowns to Aaron Rodgers, and he was making it look easy against you guys in the start.
He really was. I mean, yeah, we got down 21-0 straight away, and they didn't abandon the run game at first, because the Vikings' first score came on a 75-yard Dalvin Cook touchdown run.
Right.
So they stayed committed to the game plan a bit more than you'd think. But, yeah, I mean, the Vikings had their opportunities in that one, and, yeah, they just couldn't convert, and it was really kind of painful to watch there toward the end.
Is that where it went sideways? Was that, obviously the 21-0 hole is going to be, an imposing deal for any football team, let alone a good one like the Vikings are playing at so far. But, did it put the ball in Cousins' hands a little bit more than you would have hoped for? Or, because I was listening to another Bears podcast earlier today, and the Vikings guy that was on that show was saying that, basically because it was in Cousins' hands, he had an atrocious game, like one of his worst ever in a Vikings uniform against Green Bay, and that's kind of what ultimately did you in.
He did. As bad as the Week 17 game against you guys last year was, I think the Green Bay game a couple weeks ago might have been worse, just because he made some throws that I don't know where he was looking, what he was thinking about. That last interception he threw when we were looking at first and goal from the 8-yard line with an opportunity to go ahead was just inexcusable. And I mean, he acknowledged that after the fact, but I mean, after that, it's a little too late to acknowledge that he screwed up that bad. But, I think Cousins is capable of winning games, but I don't think it's the sort of thing you want to lean on all the time. And, I'd be surprised if Cousins had another game that awful as the Vikings quarterback. I mean, we can always hope he's not that awful again, but
right.
Yeah, I mean, the Vikings are married to this guy for this season and next season at least. So all you can do is hope that he finally gets it figured out here at some point and doesn't make just idiotic throws like that anymore.
Yeah, what about that last one? You talked about the interception there. Was he trying to hit a receiver? Was he trying to throw it away? Because I was watching it live at the moment and saw it happen. And actually, I wasn't convinced that it was a catch or an interception. But, that was the ruling on the field. And the camera angles just did you guys no favors as far as being able to reverse it or showing evidence of it touching the ground or, him not having control of the ball. But I'm trying to remember the play in my head, and I can't remember if he was trying to throw it away and didn't put enough on it, or if he was trying to thread the needle and got caught by the DB.
I think if you watch the play, because Cousins starts out, it's a regular pass, he gets flushed out to his right,
yeah.
And I think there was a moment that Stephon Diggs was open, but with the way he had to escape the pressure, he had to kind of take a little bit of a wider rollout than he might have liked. And by the time that he got rid of the ball, Diggs wasn't open anymore. But I think Cousins thought that he could get it to him anyway. But if he was going to try to get it to him, I mean, trying to throw it 30 yards off your back foot into the corner of the end zone to a guy that's covered, that's probably, you know, that ball needs to go into the third row of the seats, and you need to go back for second down and goal, particularly because, you know, Dalvin Cook was killing the Packers on that drive. I mean, they were ripping off runs of 7 yards, 10 yards, and they got down the field almost exclusively because of the run. And, I mean, we can argue the fact whether they should have called a pass on first down in the first place, just trying to catch the Packers off guard. But, you know, in that situation, there is no need to play hero ball and take chances there. You just got to get rid of that thing and, you know, line it up again for second down. I mean, you're in four down territory anyway, so you've got three plays to get the ball in the end zone. There was no reason to force that on first down, and that might have been the most inexcusable element of the entire thing, regardless of the coverage. Just the fact that it was first and goal and you try to throw that pass, I mean, you got three more shots at it. There was no need to force that pass in that situation.
Yeah, that does add an element to it. I didn't realize that it was a first down play, you know, but I just knew that it was a killer of an interception. It was a key moment in the football game that ended up costing the Vikings the football game. And the color commentator, I believe it was Moose Johnson, was unforgiving as far as the throw that he made. And as a Bears fan, it was very much a deja vu moment of the pick that Mitch threw against Adrian Amos, of all people, in week one, where he thought he had Allen Robinson over the top, and Amos knew the play was coming and played it perfect and basically stayed out of Mitch's view just long enough for Mitch to make the throw, and then he ran underneath it and picked it off. But, you know, it was an equally unexcusable throw, especially at that key element and that key point in the game.
Yeah, and I don't think people would have been so angry about it if it would have been a third down or even a fourth down.
Right, exactly. But
it was first and goal from the 8 yard line. There's no reason to try to force that pass in there.
Yeah, that does add an element to it. If it's third down, that's something else, you know. But it's first down. Yeah, like you said, you know, throw it into the Lambeau leap section of the stands, and we'll go back and give it a shot again on second down, see if we can't get him to bite on that play action for a change, or run a draw play and have Dalvin gash him for 10 and get a touchdown, or whatever. But that was I remember the play, I just forgotten the situation itself. And first down does add a little bit more of a frustration element to the whole situation.
It certainly does. I mean, it was a bad throw anyway, but, you know, like I said, if you're trying to thread the needle on third down or fourth down in four down territory when you've got less than 3 minutes left on the clock, I can't remember the exact time situation. It was 3 or 4 minutes left. But yeah, throwing that pass on third or fourth down is a completely different thing than throwing it on first down. And I think if it would have been a third down or a fourth down pass, people wouldn't have been so up in arms about it. But yeah, it was a first down pass, and they wasted a golden opportunity to steal a game that they probably didn't have any business winning, but just about pulled it out anyway.
Yeah, because it was there's a big difference, like when you're talking about that point in the football game and the down and distance situation. On first down, you don't have to make the throw. You don't have to make a throw because you still have, you know, you're in four. When you're down five, that's a four down territory situation no matter what, because who's going to kick a field goal and then go for the onside? That's not going to happen.
No.
So you're going to try to get into the end zone and put the onus on Rodgers to try to beat you guys, which after that 21 point explosion, they didn't score another point after that. After they got off to that big start, it was 16 straight from the Vikings to close out the game. But, you know, like you said, if it's third down or it's fourth down, then you have to try and get it in there. And he made a throw like it was third or fourth down, and it wasn't. And that does definitely factor into what were you thinking throwing that pass. And as a Bears fan, I can definitely sympathize. I feel every inch of that, because we've been hearing that about Mitch, you know, since the season started, because obviously we didn't get to see him play in the preseason other than three handoffs in the very first game against Carolina in the preseason. He handed the ball off three times to Mike Davis, and that was it for the preseason for him. But, you know, you and I talked about it during the summer. I've talked to anybody who would listen to me going into this season, was that I couldn't wait for this year to start because it was going to be year two in the system. You know, you kept hearing things like he's running the offense. He's not learning it anymore. The defense is raving about what he's been doing in practice and training camp and all the rest of that stuff. And then it starts with the dud in Green Bay. That was, you know, the cherry on top was the interception at the end of the game and our best offensive drive that got us closest to scoring points. He wasn't great until the last 90 seconds of the football game to get us in field goal range, and then he showed the flashes that give us optimism. And then while he was statistically fantastic against the Redskins, he kept making these little mistakes that were kind of glaring. He only had 5 or 6 incompletions in the whole game, but he had a really bad interception to Josh Norman that killed a drive that could have put points on the board that really put the game away. And some of his incompletions were gross inaccuracies, or, you know, putting the wrong kind of touch on the ball, putting too much on it when he didn't need as much, and things like that. So the frustration still sits there with the quarterback, even though he's progressed in each of the three games so far this year.
Yeah, and I haven't watched a lot of Bears football this year, unfortunately. I've had other stuff going on, but yeah, just kind of reading the stuff on Trubisky. I mean, I'm not really sure what to make of the guy yet, yeah, to be honest. I mean, you know, we saw, you know, the season ender against us in 2018, and, you know, when the Bears needed to put a drive together at the end of the game, there was Mitch Trubisky completing, yeah, passes, scrambling for first downs, doing the right thing.
Yeah, you know, sharp holding that on day.
Holding onto the football for 9 minutes in the fourth quarter after, mm-hmm, the Vikings had gotten within a score. And yeah, now I hear stuff like what you've described, where he, you know, he looked like garbage in week one, and, you know, until the 90-second remaining mark against the Broncos, he didn't look good again. And yeah, I mean, it's difficult with these young quarterbacks that, you know, you just don't know what to make of him because, you know, like you said, this is his second year in the Matt Nagy system after, you know, a year with whatever John Fox was doing when he was, yeah, a rookie and whatnot. And yeah, I mean, you would think this is the point where guys would start turning the corner, and it doesn't sound like he's getting through the corner yet.
Yeah, I don't think anyone expected him to be Mahomes or anything like that in year two of the system or anything. I just don't think that anyone really expected for him to look the same as he did at the beginning of last season, like we were starting over again and things like that. I think that's where the growing frustration comes from. Now, in Mitch's defense, his offensive line hasn't been nearly as good as it was a year ago. And, you know, he was under fire a lot against Green Bay. We struggle mightily running the football, even though David Montgomery is a savage of a running back, and he will fight for every single inch that he gets. But a friend of mine that I've had on the show, his name is Brett Coleman. He does videos on YouTube. And,
oh, yeah. We're, yeah, familiar with Brett.
Yeah, I've had Brett on the show a few times, and the one that he famously did at the end of the summer was a year-long analysis of Mitch Trubisky, and he said exactly what you said. He sat down and watched all 17 games or all 15 games that Mitch played last year, and I still have no idea what to make of this guy. Like,
no,
basically, he has his moments. It's like, what the hell was he thinking? And then he has those other moments where, like, that's elite quarterback stuff right there. And
yeah,
it's just the inconsistency of one or the other that drives analysts crazy, and especially Bear fans, because we don't know if we're going to get Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde.
No, and we had kind of the same thing. Brett did a video where he looked at, you know, Kirk Cousins,
yes,
has the reputation,
yes,
of not playing well against good teams. They went 1-6 against teams with winning records last year. So he went back and looked at all 7 of those games the Vikings played against winning teams and determined that at most you could lay one of those 7 games at the feet of Kirk Cousins.
Mm-hmm.
And the other 6 games, he had a lot of help losing those football games.
Yeah.
Whether it was bad play calling or defensive lapses or whatever. But, you know, as unfair as it is, probably for him to have gotten that reputation, that reputation is going to stick until he reaches a point where, you know, the chips are down and he does finally come up big. And, you know, I don't know if it's going to happen while he's in Minnesota. I mean, he's got a year and almost two full years left to try to break up the narrative here a little bit. But yeah, we've seen kind of the same thing. And like we said, well, Cousins has a new offensive coordinator this year, but it's a system that he's familiar with from earlier in his career. So yeah, I don't know if he's going to be able to make those adjustments and, you know, get better as the season goes on. But it's not like Trubisky, because, you know, Trubisky's in his third year in the league. I think Cousins is on year seven. And, you know, these are not the sorts of things that a seventh-year quarterback should be doing sometimes. But, you know, if you were to rank the NFL starting quarterbacks, I'd probably still put Cousins somewhere in the top half of the league. I don't know if that says more about the state of NFL quarterbacking or if I believe too much in – if I believe in Kirk Cousins too much or what the thing is. But, you know, I think he's a better-than-average quarterback that has just, you know, not gotten the job done at the biggest moments. And like I said, until he does something that goes against that, that reputation is going to stay with him.
Well, winning a game in Chicago would go a long way in solving that problem or you know, kind of putting a dent in the narrative anyway. Because, number one, the Bears are a winning football team. They are one of the – I mean, as our defense alone makes us one of the best teams in the league right now. The offense just needs to figure out how they can catch up. But, you know, winning in Chicago, which I just read a stat that says since the start of the millennium – the Bears are 15-3 in Chicago against the Vikings. So,
yep,
history's not on your side.
No, it's really
there. And
we can name all three games the Vikings won too, because they were all memorable games. Because there was the
07 Peterson game.
Yeah, there was the Hester Peterson game in 2007.
Yep.
I believe it was, and then there was the Teddy Bridgewater to Stephon Diggs go ahead touchdown game in 2015, and then there was Mitch Trubisky's debut as a starter in 2017. And other than that, we generally get our rear ends handed to us when we go to Soldier Field. Either that or something just super weird happens, like, I don't know, Chad Hutchinson comes out of the mothballs and leads the Bears to a victory over the Vikings. It was during that time when the Bears would start, like, a different quarterback every year, and it didn't matter how terrible they looked leading up to the Vikings game. They would just go off on the Vikings for like 300 yards and three scores, and there was just nothing anybody could do about it, and it was just awful.
Yeah, I mean, well, how about the late 2009, like the week 16 Monday night game where Devin Aromashadu goes for like 170 and three touchdowns against the Vikings, and it cost them home field advantage in the playoffs, losing
it sure
that football game. It's like, that game was huge for Minnesota. The Bears somehow managed to take it to overtime. And the opening drive, Aromashadu like 40, 50 yards down the sideline, wide open, by the way. And he's been smoking you guys all night, but he's one-on-one down the sideline, wide open, ball game. Home field goes to New Orleans, and that ended up playing a huge, huge factor in the NFC playoffs that year.
Yeah, and I can't remember what year it was, but, yeah, there was a game where Farratt was starting a quarterback for Minnesota, and I can't remember who was starting a quarterback for you guys, but both teams put up 40 points. It was like 48-41 or just something insane. I'm trying to remember what year that was.
I think it's 2008.
It must have been, because that would have been the year Farratt started about three-fourths of our games because of the Tavares Jackson injuries. Yeah, it was like 48-41.
Yeah, I remember
nobody
that
could
game.
Stop the other team. It was crazy.
Yeah, it was like like watching a video game. Like whoever has the ball last is probably going to win because the defenses never got off the bus today.
No, it was awesome to watch, but yeah, it was crazy. It's not something you see out of these two teams.
No, definitely not. A 90-point explosion between these two teams. Like no, you don't see that very often. But I mean, there's been a lot of memorable games between these two teams. You have rookie Peanut Tillman stealing the interception out of Randy Moss's hands in 2003. And there, you know, a lot of games like that in this series. And then you go to Minnesota And just like how the you know, Minnesota can't seem to find an answer for the Bears in Chicago, we always seem to get our asses handed to us when we go to Minnesota. So there's just something about this home and home series. I think it's really like the one true home field advantage series in the division.
It really is, because I mean, the Vikings have even had a little bit of success at Lambeau over the past few years.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure what their record is. I mean, I think they have I think they're close to 500 or over 500 against the Packers in the Mike Zimmer era. But yeah, there is no series in this division, I don't think, where home field advantage means more than Vikings Bears.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because sometimes the Bears win in Detroit and the Lions win in Chicago and vice versa, you know, and things like that. But it teeters back and forth. I mean, it's either, you know, like with the Bears and the Packers, the Packers are just dominating the series right now. But, you know, the home and home thing doesn't matter in that one. It's less of a factor with Bears-Lions, but with Bears-Vikings, it historically definitely matters where the game is taking place.
And I'm not sure if when the game takes place is a function really of that either, because, those late November and December games in Chicago were a completely different thing than a, you know, September or even early October game at Soldier Field, too.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't change in Minnesota too much, because with the exception of the couple years at TCF Bank, everything was indoors. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if that plays a role in it, too. I'd have to do a more extensive breakdown of that. But, yeah, the home field advantage in Bears-Vikings is huge most years.
Yeah, and then I heard another crazy stat, or maybe I read it online, that the Bears are wearing throwbacks on Sunday. We're wearing the old school, like, 1936 uniforms.
I saw those.
Yeah, which I have very mixed feelings about. I'm okay with the helmets. I'm okay with the stripes. The jersey I actually like a lot. We're going to be wearing white at home, which is going to be different. And the pants are fine. You can't go wrong with the solid navy. But then we're from the knee down with those socks, the pippy long stocking horizontal, you know, horizontal stripes. That is like, that just does not work for me at all. Like, those socks are atrocious. But, you know, it all goes sideways for me from there. And I'm a uniform snob, so this stuff really matters to me. I am really wondering how that's going to look on TV with 11 of those uniforms on the field at once. So, but the stat was that the Vikings are 0-5 against the Bears in Chicago when they're wearing alternate jerseys.
Well, that just means they're due, I guess.
Yeah,
but I mean, I did see the Bears uniforms. I mean, they're significantly better than those god-awful Steeler Bumblebee throwbacks that you throw every once in a while.
Yeah.
Those things are atrocious, but I can't even remember the last time the Vikings did the throwback jersey thing, but I would love it if they showed up on Sunday afternoon at Lambeau in the old school purple with the white pants, and, you know, just because the Vikings uniforms up until the last couple of years really hadn't changed a whole hell of a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would love to see them come out with throwbacks of their own. I mean, obviously, they can't go back to the 30s like the Bears have done, but, mm-hmm. you know, just something from the Bud Grant era would be nice if the Bears are going to do this.
Yeah, they pretty much held on to those, to the very simple, you know, purple, solid white numbers uniforms for, like, well into the 2000s, didn't they?
Yeah, until I can't remember. Like, trying to remember what year they started.
06 or 07 or something like that.
Yeah, they started messing around with the uniforms in like 06 or 07 when they went to like the yellow on the collar and whatnot. That nobody liked those, and then they went to the ones they have now with the kind of funky numbers, which I don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think they're obviously. I don't think anything is going to be as good as the old school throwback Vikings uniforms, but I mean, it was a significant upgrade from where they had been previously. So,
yeah, I think the craziest tweak that Minnesota made to their uniform was they added the gold trim to the white numbers on the home jersey, and that was like the big uniform change for like the long, like, because I was a big fan of the Vikings in the 90s when Warren Moon was there. Warren Moon was my favorite player in the league after Walter Payton retired, so I followed the Vikings. I love the Jake Reed days, you know, and Chris Carter with Moon and Robert Smith, the running back. I love those teams, man. And that was the uniform that they had. As crazy, the craziest thing about them was they had that gold trim around the white numbers. Otherwise, it was a by-the-numbers Minnesota Vikings uniform, and they held on to that for a while. And then when we got into the the new millennium, all of a sudden, you know, the numbers got smaller. We're putting a little funky thing on the numbers now, and we're adding a little more gold to the uniform than there was before. We've got a stripe down the side now of the jersey and things like that. So yeah, I blame the Lions because I think they were the first ones to start messing around with the uniforms, and then the Vikings followed suit. And you know, it's the Bears and the Packers that have held on to the same uniform since the dawn of time.
It's always the best, you know, course of action to blame Detroit for anything.
Right.
I think you know football uniforms, cars, you know, whatever it is, you know, just blame Detroit. They're there. That's what they're there for.
Michigan's a battleground state in the election, so we have them to thank for how it goes sideways sometimes. So
yeah. They do. But yeah, they've kept Jim Harbaugh out of the National Football League, which I guess is a positive thing. But
sure.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Your mileage may vary on the Harbaugh thing, I guess, is, you know, since you
I got
you,
mixed feelings.
He was your quarterback for a while. Yeah.
I got mixed feelings about Harbaugh. You know, it was good for us, and you know, but it went bad there towards the end, and everything, and it just, you know, he went on to do things in his career after he left Chicago, which was nice to see. But
there was that player that every Viking fans remembers that I thought Mike Ditka was actually going to murder Jim Harbaugh.
Yes,
on the sideline at the Metrodome after he called an audible or something and threw it right to the Viking, and you know, they blew a 20-point lead and wind up losing the game. And yeah, I didn't think Harbaugh was going to get out of that game in one piece out of the Metrodome, because Ditka was not pleased.
No, he was definitely not. He was he was fuming, would be probably the best word to describe Ditka's mental state in that moment. He was not happy with Harbaugh. It's like the play that Ditka called, or whoever our OC was at the time called, would have worked. Like, the, you know, we run the play that we called in that situation, we would have been fine. But instead, you try to get cute. The next thing you know, it's going back the other way for a touchdown, and this game is slipping away from us now. So, he definitely was lucky to get away with his life that night, because Ditka was not pleased. So, yeah, great memory. Thanks for that, by the way. But you know,
As long as we're dredging up old papers.
Yeah, why not? Why not? You know what? It's my fault. I brought up Devin Aromashadu. I'm sorry. So I deserve that. I did bring him up. So that's my fault.
That's okay. We're even.
All right. Cool. But that 07 game with Peterson and Hester in 07, that game was a blast to watch.
It really was. I mean, that was you know, Peterson with the 200 yards and three touchdowns, and you know, it looked like the Vikings had it put away, and then all of a sudden, no, here's Devin Hester running wide open, and oh, we're gonna put Adrian Peterson back on kickoff return.
Oh my God!
See how that works. And yeah, now Longwell's gonna hit a field goal from like 55 yards or something, just ridiculous.
Don't kick it to him. Don't kick it to Peterson. The guy has been unstoppable today, and he was like literally a kicker fingernail tackle away from running it back for a touchdown. I was like, why did we kick it to him? why did we do that? And sure enough, you know, he got just enough that he needed for Longwell to hit a 55 yarder to close out the game. It was like, of course it ends that way. Of course.
And it was worse because the three plays the Vikings ran on offense after that, they lost like 5 or 6 yards. And it was just, I'm like, what the hell are you even doing? Kick the damn ball.
That was a crazy, crazy day, man. Cause I think you guys were up like 28-17 or something like that. We had to pull off a miracle just to get close and put ourselves in that situation. And the second that we do, we gave it right back. So that was the tail of the tape in 2007. It was like, we're the defending NFC champions. We didn't play like it at all that year. Everything we did right in 06, we went out of our way to do it wrong in 2007. So that was a tough year. But that was a great game. I enjoyed that one.
It was
not so much as a Bears fan, but as a football fan, I loved it. I absolutely could go back and watch that all over again. So, Peterson was amazing in that game, and it was his rookie year. So it's like, we got about 10 years of this. That's not going to be fun. That's not going to be great. So it's like, because when he got drafted, I remember I was watching the draft with a buddy of mine, and we were sitting there watching, and it's like the Vikings take Peterson. And I was like, well, that's Barry Sanders 2.0 right there. That's a guy that's just going to kick our ass for the next 10 years.
And it was so strange because, you know, everyone, you know, I think Peterson was being mocked to the Vikings a lot that year in the mock drafts leading up to it. And then you had this section of people that were like, well, they have Chester Taylor at running back. They don't need to draft Adrian Peterson. And like, yeah, Chester Taylor's nice, but he's not this guy. That's for sure. But I mean, yeah, there were people that wanted us to take Brady Quinn instead of Adrian Peterson. I can't imagine how poorly that would have gone.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would have been awful because Brady Quinn was not good.
Nope.
But they made the right choice.
Yes, they did. They did. It would be, you know, like you couldn't believe that somebody would pass on him if he was still there at seven, that they would pass on him. And they were smart enough to take him, and history tells the rest of the story on that one. But so anyway, we got a game on Sunday. We've been talking about all this history and everything. Well, I mean, the reason we talked about it is that it is a factor to consider in this game. Will the Vikings be able to overcome what seems to be cursing them and win this game on Sunday? It's only week four, but it's an NFC North matchup. Both teams are 0-1 in the division because we both lost to Green Bay so far. So you don't want to get into an 0-2 hole in the division. Obviously it's also a conference game, so that's important as well. It's a rivalry matchup, the whole nine yards. So even though it's only week four, there are big stakes with this football game.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it would probably be slightly worse for the Bears if they were to lose because, if you're 0-2 in the division, but you're 0-2 at home
yes,
in
absolutely.
The division, whereas if the Vikings lose, they're 0-2 in the division, but yeah, they're 0-2 on the road because they would have lost at Lambeau and at Soldier Field.
Right.
I mean, but still, either way, you don't want to get into a 0-2 hole in the division. And yeah, it's going to be, both these defenses are playing lights out right now. Khalil Mack is obviously just insanely, I don't think I could list three defensive players in the NFL that are better than Khalil Mack at this point. If I can, I'm not sure.
It pretty much begins and ends in Aaron Donald, and then Mack is either slightly above Donald or just below him, but that's 1 and 1A as far as individual defensive players, and then the rest of the list. You can argue about who's number two or number three after those guys. Those are the two best defensive players in the league right now.
They definitely are. I mean, but on the Vikings side, I mean, both Danielle Hunter and Everson Griffin, who we are so happy to see back to his old self after all the crap he went through last year with the issues he had. And yeah, he's been back. He's been terrorizing people again. And yeah, And like you said, the Bears offensive line has not been performing to the level that it was last season. So we're going to have to see if Hunter and Griffin can take advantage of that, because if they can and they can get Mitch Trubisky off his game a little bit, this one might be there for the taking for the Vikings. I don't think it's going to be a shootout or anything, obviously. But yeah, I think it wouldn't be surprising for either team to win this one, despite the Vikings' history at Soldier Field.
Right. Like we were saying before, the defenses on both ends make this a winnable game for both sides. I mean, the Bears are the home favorite, but they're only 2-point favorites. The over-under is 38, which I think is generous.
Yeah.
I'm taking the under on that for sure if I'm a betting man.
I don't think we're getting to 38 points.
Yeah, we're not going to see 48-41 like we did in 2008. That's not going to happen here. I would be floored if that happened. If these two defenses both gave up a 40 burger in this game, that would be insane.
It would be.
So I think it's definitely going to be a low scoring, knockdown drag out affair. We could get an old school black and blue division matchup here. And I'm hoping that our offensive line is up to the task, because week one, they were terrible in pass protection against Green Bay. Week two, they shut out Bradley Chubb and Von Miller. Like, I think we only had like four pressures the entire football game. So Mitch went basically untouched throughout the entire game. But last week, at the start of the game anyway, he was under pressure by, Ryan Kerrigan and Montez Sweat for the Redskins. So they need to pick a lane, with this. Are they going to be I would settle for average because they've either been really good like they were against Denver or horrible like they were at the start of the game with Washington or throughout the game against Green Bay. That's going to be the tale of the tape in this game is if our pass rush can handle, you know, Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter, then we have a shot. But if we get pushed around like we have in two of the three games this year, it could get ugly fast for the Bears.
And the big thing, yeah, for the Vikings is, I mean, if those two guys are getting there off the edges, what's killed us with Trubisky against the Vikings the last couple of years is when he gets away and starts, you know, getting chunks of yardage with his legs down the field. I mean, they need to get pressure on him, but they also need to keep him contained so that doesn't happen. And, you know, you get third and long or, yeah, third and eight, and Trubisky runs for 11 yards. And, you know, those are just killers. And, yeah, you can't they can't let that kind of thing happen in this one if they want to have a shot.
So if we want to, and we, when I say we, I mean the Bears. So if we want to come away with a win, would you agree with the, I called it the Rams, because I said this is what the Bears should do last year, which was, you know, take the ball out of Todd Gurley's hands and put it in Jared Goff's hands. We want to take the ball out of Dalvin Cook's hands and put it in Kirk Cousins. Would that be, you know, a good way to come away with a win against this team?
I think that's certainly accurate because, you know, if Cook doesn't get going, then the play action game isn't as effective. And, you know, those rushers from the Bears can kind of pin their ears back and start coming after Cousins with all the Chuck Pagano, the fanciness and whatnot. But, yeah, I think if Dalvin Cook gets going and, you know, puts together the kind of performance he has over the first few weeks, this is definitely winnable for Minnesota. But yeah, this I would agree with your sentiment. If you know, you can put the game in Cousins' hands, that's kind of what they need to do, I think.
Yeah, and talk to me about your kicking situation, because it's almost, I mean, it hasn't quite had as much weight as the Bears, just because it's what ended our season. It's something that we've been dealing with throughout the entire off season, but both teams were in on the Kari Vedvik sweepstakes and you guys won, and that worked out like a fart in a spacesuit. You know, it did not go well at all. He's not even on the team. And did he make it out of preseason with you guys?
No, they cut the part of the final cuts. So yeah, we won. Yay. nothing like just tossing a fifth round pick onto the fire to get a guy that you cut after, I believe it was 17 days he spent with the team. But, you know, he came out, he wasn't as good a kicker as Dan Bailey, and he wasn't as good a punter at Matt Weil, who we had at the time. We've since replaced him with one of the Flying Colquitt brothers. Okay. Apparently, you know, bringing in the kicker helped kind of wake Dan Bailey up a little bit, because he's actually been pretty solid you know, in the limited opportunities he's had. I mean, against Atlanta, he didn't get any field goal opportunities, and you know, he buried a couple against the Raiders, and he's missed one extra point so far, but that was a weird circumstance because there was a penalty involved, so the extra point attempt was actually, I believe, 48 yards, and it wound up getting partially blocked. But yeah, you know, he's 8 out of 9 on his extra point attempts, and I believe 2 out of 3 on field goals this year. And, you know, if you look at the stats, he is one of the most accurate kickers in the history of the league. But, I mean, putting on this Vikings uniform just does stuff to kickers, I guess. I'm not sure why that is necessarily. But, you know, he kind of got woken up with the Vedvik deal, and he's been solid. And, you know, Colquitt has done a decent job. And, you know, he's got experience holding, which is something that I don't believe Weil had a lot of prior to last season. But, you know, Colquitt's been doing it for years, and, you know, he's kind of the steady presence this team needed. So, yeah, I think we're kind of getting to the point where we're getting our confidence back in Dan Bailey. But, yeah, we'll just kickers are so up and down. We'll just have to see how it goes the rest of the way.
Yeah, and the reason that that's important is because with these defenses, kickers are going to be a factor in this game.
Yep.
You know, because I envision a, you know, like a 16-13 kind of game, or you know, something in that in that area that, you know, where it's going to come down to field goals, because these teams are just not going to be able to drive the football or on each other, or at least the first three games of the season, say that's going to be extremely difficult. So points are going to be at a premium, and kickers are going to need to perform. Eddie Pinero has been great for us so far, and I was wondering how Dan Bailey, or actually I forgot it was Dan Bailey, I was wondering how your kicking situation was working out for you, because we were the ones that were stealing all the headlines as far as the kicking was concerned, but I think there was a bit more drama going on in Minnesota.
There was, but Pinero's hurt now, isn't he?
Didn't he has a pinched nerve that he kicked through on Monday night. You could see how it was bothering him. He missed his first kick of the year on Monday. It was a 44-yarder. He just pushed it just a little bit to the right, but he came back later in the game and nailed the 38-yarder, and of course he nailed the 53-yarder to win us the game in Denver, that crazy finish and everything. He scored the only points of the game for us in Green Bay. So, you know, but he's been kicking very well for us. So he didn't practice today. I saw he was on the injured list, as did not participate. And, you know, they said it was a pinched nerve. He injured himself during a workout over the weekend. So we'll see how long it hampers him. And otherwise, I mean, he played hurt on Monday and he did great. So hopefully he can pull that off, especially with even though it's a short week, even though, you know, with the rest will do him some good and he'll be fine on Sunday. I haven't heard anything about the Bears trying out kickers or anything just in case. So,
that could end up being if he can't go. I mean, that obviously affects the chemistry there too, and that could play a role as well. So, I mean, obviously you don't want a guy to be hurt or miss games or whatever, even as a opposing fan or whatever. So I hope he's all right, but. Yeah, that's definitely something, you know, if the Bears have to bring in a kicker on Friday or Saturday or whatever, mm-hmm. that could be huge at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I'm always excited about Bears Vikings. It's always been a fun rivalry because unlike Bears Packers, which has been very Packer heavy, this has been one of the, like, I love the rivalry the Bears have with the Lions, because that's a true rivalry where it goes back and forth. There's competition in those games. With the Bears and the Vikings, there's the home rivalry. At the home game, Bear fans are optimistic. On the road, not so much, and vice versa for the Vikings. It's one of those rivalries where home field means, in some cases, means more than anything else. It, you know, I hate to bring up Devin Aromashadu again, but there's no reason that roster should have beaten the one that it did on Monday night. The Brett Favre, you know, having that crazy year in 2009 with Peterson and all those guys. It was just a far superior roster, and we beat you guys that night for no other reason than the fact that the game took place in Soldier Field. I'm convinced that was the only reason that it went down that way. So the home field advantage matters a lot in this rivalry, and I'm interested to see what will happen on Sunday, because our teams are pretty even right now.
Yeah, they are. I mean, both these teams are playing a pretty great defense, and, you know, the offenses have had their issues at times, and yeah, it might be one of those games, like you said earlier, where whoever has the ball last winds up winning this football game. And yeah, you said the over-under was 38. Mm-hmm. I said, I don't think we're getting to 38 points between these two teams, but I mean, stranger things have happened, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be as fun and exciting to watch as it always is when these two teams get together.
Yeah, unless we get some unexpected defensive touchdowns sprinkled in there, I don't think we're going to get close to 38 on Sunday. So I wouldn't anticipate that at all. But Chris, man, always great to have you on the show. It was fun taking that little trip down memory lane with our teams and you know, some of our history and some of the matchups that we've been through. Unfortunately, we don't get to talk to you for like another 13 weeks. But what do you say we get together around Christmas time to talk about week 17, see where we stand around that time?
Yeah, just like clockwork, week 17, and we'll be doing this again, just like we've done however many years in a row it's been now. So
it's 4 years, 5 out of the last 6 is what it's amounted to so far.
Yeah, so if there's very few things in this world you can count on, but that certainly seems to be one of them at this point, because the NFL has decided that this is just the way things are going to be every week 17. We're going to send Chicago to Minnesota, And yeah, that's just how things are going to end. So I'm already looking forward to it.
Yeah. Death, taxes, and Bears Vikings week 17. Those are the things you can count on in life. So Chris, thanks so much for coming back on, man. I look forward to talking to you again.
Not a problem, Larry. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
As always, I want to thank Chris Gates for coming on to the show. You can catch him at the Daily Norseman, dailynorseman.com on SB Nation. You can find him on Twitter as well. And, you know, great guy. Love having him on the show. Like I said, probably my favorite talk that I've had with him on the show, talking about that rivalry and the Devin Aromashadu thing and, you know, how it was basically a meaningless game for the Bears. They had no business beating that team in 2009, you know, the super team with Favre having that last great year in 2009, an MVP caliber season, leading the Vikings, you know, to an easy division title, sweeping the Packers and stuff like that, being able to, you know, kind of pay them back for shipping them out of town. And, you know, home field advantage for the playoffs was on the line in this game against the Bears. And Aromashadu comes out and catches like 9 balls for $180 or something like that, including the game-winning touchdown. He just killed him that night, man. It was crazy. It was a crazy game. Like, everyone's going into this thing. We don't have a snowball's chance in hell of beating this team. And not only did we beat him, we put 36 on him and beat him in overtime. Amazing, amazing night. I mean, it was crazy. It was like watching David beat up Goliath. That's what that matchup was. You know, I think the Vikings were 11-3 or something like that at the time, and you know, whatever it was, and we were on our way to 7-9, and I think we lost the week after to finish out the year 7-9 or whatever it was. So I mean, it was a down year for us for sure. It was a year the Bears struggled mightily, especially on defense, because Urlacher went down with that wrist injury week one against Green Bay in 2009. So we're playing without him. Our linebacking core was beat up. We couldn't play defense. We're giving up 40 points a game like 3 weeks in a row and stuff like that. And then to come out and be able to outscore the Vikings, who had a very potent offense that year. It had year three of Adrian Peterson. Like I said, Brett Favre, his last great season. We shouldn't have beat that team, and we beat them. We did. And that's just, you know, like a microcosm of what the rivalry is like. There have been several times where the Bears had the better team going into Minnesota, couldn't figure out how to win because it's the Metrodome or it's, you know, or it's US Bank Stadium or what have you. And it's just like Bears just have bad luck in the Metrodome. The one game we didn't talk about was when the Bears won in 06 in the Metrodome. That was a crazy game. It was week three. It was our Super Bowl run season. And after dominating the first two games of the year, we come into the Metrodome and it's a dogfight between the Bears and the Vikings, and the hero of the game, the unlikely hero of that football game, was Rashid Davis catching the winning touchdown pass. The Bears had to drive to score a touchdown to win the game and come away with a 3-0 record. One of the rare times the Bears won, and they beat them in Minnesota on a last minute drive. It was pretty great. So, a lot of fun talking to Chris about that stuff. Looking forward to this game, man. I mean, I'm wavering a bit because the Vikings are tough. You know, Akeem Hicks may not play on Sunday, and that's going to put a big hole in our defense. And we have a great defense, thank God. So we will miss Akeem Hicks, but it's not catastrophic to lose him. You hate to say something like that, but it's true. We still have Khalil Mack and Leonard Floyd and, Eddie Goldman still plugging up the middle. We got Roquan and Danny Trevathan behind him. Behind them, we got, you know, two top flight safeties in HaHa Clinton Dix and Eddie Jackson to kind of fill up the box with and things like that. So we will definitely miss Akeem Hicks. We will definitely miss him if he doesn't play. But it won't be the end of the world for us if we do. That's the beauty of the roster that Ryan Pace has put together for us. So, you know, we definitely want Akeem out there, but I think we'll be okay. Not great, maybe not as dominant as we were on Monday, but I think we'll be okay. But, you know, we don't want to find out that we're not going to be. So I would prefer that Akeem Hicks is out there at 80% rather than 100% missing him on Sunday. But, you know, the Bears haven't played anyone who can run the football like this yet. And, you know, we'll see if the Bears can knock the Vikings off of their game plan, which would be to come in, run the football down our throats, wear down this defense so maybe in the fourth quarter they get that play-action game going and start torching our defense when we're so worried about trying to stop Dalvin Cook that, oh, we forgot about the fact that they have two awesome receivers in Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs, you know, not to mention Kyle Rudolph is a pretty great tight end as well. So these guys have weapons that they can hurt us with. And right now the one that we have to be most worried about is Dalvin Cook. He's the key to the game. Stopping him, I think, opens the floodgates. It, like, you know, you heard me mention it with Chris. I think maybe even brought it up during the review episode the other day. This is kind of like, you know, the Vikings are the Rams, and Dalvin Cook is Todd Gurley. And if we can shut Todd Gurley down, we put the ball in Jared Goff's hands. In this case, we'd be Kirk Cousins. And maybe we, if we put the game on him, put the ball in his hands, we can force him into a throw he doesn't want to make or force him into a mistake and, you know, have things go our way. Now, we have, that was a big part of the conversation. We have history on our side. The Bears are 15-3 in this millennium against the Vikings. That's an outstanding home record. You heard me bring up that odd stat about how the Bears are undefeated, 5-0. Or the Vikings are 0-5 when the Bears wear throwback uniforms or alternate uniforms. So even in those stupid orange jerseys, we're undefeated against the Vikings like we were last year on Sunday Night Football. We've worn the 1940s throwbacks a couple of times against the Vikings, I believe. So, and we're wearing those throwback unis on Sunday with the stripes and everything like that. So that's going for us. And there's the whole Kirk Cousins can't beat a good football team thing. You know, you heard us talking about the Brett Coleman video about how, you know, Kirk Cousins, the Vikings were 1-6 against winning teams last year. And all but one of those victories you could blame on somebody else or blame on the team as a whole. Really, it wasn't until week 17 that you could really hang a big loss on Kirk Cousins and Kirk Cousins alone. But this is a reputation that will follow him everywhere. And that's why this game is so important. It would help, you know, put a dent in the narrative that is Kirk Cousins can't beat a good football team. It would put a dent in the narrative of the tradition, the curse, whatever, of the Vikings not being able to win in Soldier Field. And it puts the Bears behind the eight ball in an 0-2 hole in the division, an 0-2 record at home to start off the year when we lost one game at home all of last season. And, you know, we'd start the year 0-2 at home, which is not a good deal. And send us off to the UK with a bad taste in our mouths before the bye week. So it's a big football game, you know. NFC North, the division rivalry. It's going to be a good football game. Really, really looking forward to it. And really, one of the first times I wasn't overly confident going into a Vikings game because of our, the injuries that we have on the team right now. Will these guys be 100%? And, you know, kind of low-key worried about Eddie Pinheiro and how healthy he'll be on Sunday, because you heard Chris and I talk about how, you know, points, I imagine, are going to be at a premium. We talked about the over-under for this game being at about 38.5 right now, how that's most likely an overly generous over-under for this game. I don't see these two teams combining for more than 40 points or anything. I envision like a 16-9, 14-10, something in that area, but in actually more in the vein of a 16-9, where it's a lot more field goals than actual touchdowns. And I think this is also going to be another one of those games where I subscribe to the theory that whichever team makes the fewest mistakes is going to be the one that wins. So if the Bears can conjure up an interception from Kirk Cousins, or God forbid they get ball hungry and go after the football with Dalvin Cook. And, you know, because we forced the fumble out of him last year, it really took a lot of steam out of their engine as well. If you guys remember the Sunday night game last year, the Vikings were putting on a very good looking drive And then all of a sudden, Dalvin Cook runs into Khalil Mack. You know, Khalil strips the football, sends the football going back the other way. But, you know, it's like the Vikings never really recovered, you know, from that mistake, the killing such a promising drive. They never really recovered from that. And the Bears kind of took control of the football game from there after they stole the momentum from the Vikings. So that will be very important on Sunday. On the offensive side, this is definitely one of those occasions where establishing a rhythm is paramount. You know, getting a rhythm offensively, you know, because with the Vikings running the ball, that means longer drives for them, which means their defense is on the field longer, which means they're possibly getting worn down, etc. We don't want that. We want to flip that on the Vikings. We want to be the ones moving the chains, hanging on to the football, getting something going, you know, getting, you know. And it doesn't always mean that we have to put up 50 points or score on every drive or anything to establish a rhythm offensively. Like maybe you have kind of just think about last year. We weren't always racking up the points, but we did a great job of keeping our defense off of the field. We're able to get at least, you know, two first downs, maybe a third if the drive stalled out and we had to go for a field goal or end up punting the football away. But you gave the defense that breather. You gave them 3-4 minutes of clock of game time to rest and get ready to go back out there again, as opposed to throwing two crappy passes and running it once into the dirt and kicking the ball off. The defense hasn't even been off the field for 90 seconds and they're back out there again. We don't want that to happen on Sunday. So we want to get that going offensively, if for no other reason than to keep Dalvin Cook off of the field. We want to be mistake-free on offense, so no silly throws from Mitch. You know, he needs to be better with that. You know, he thought that it was a miscommunication or a miscalculation, I think is more accurate the term for Mitch, where he threw it short to the front end of the end zone. And when Allen Robinson had beaten Josh Norman up top, if he throws it to the back corner of the end zone, that's as easy a touchdown throw as Mitch is ever going to make. Instead, he made the wrong decision and Norman was able to step in front of it and make an interception. That can't happen this week. The Vikings are very good on defense. You heard me mention to Chris that they're a step behind us in basically the major categories. The Bears have 11 sacks. The Vikings have 10. We have seven. We have, you know, four interceptions. The Vikings have three. We're the number three defense in the number three scoring defense. They're number five or something like that. They're as good statistically as we are on defense right now. So, like I said, points will be at a premium. So moving the chains, getting a rhythm going, even if we're not coming away with points, is very, very important. Being mistake-free, because these are both opportunistic defenses, and cutting back on penalties on defense as well. So Prince Amukamara, let's cut it out with the illegal face mask or the illegal hands to the face or the holding or whatever. We can't have that this week. We can't give the Vikings, we can't keep extending drives for the Vikings. We can't give them that five-yard penalty but automatic first down when we just shut them down on third and four or something like that. We have to avoid that at all costs. And then the simplest part I've already made, we got to stop the run and put the game on Kirk Cousins. So, because history and everything else says if we do that, we'll be victorious. And we already saw it happen once in Minnesota. The Packers were able to jump out to an early lead, and the Vikings didn't abandon the run, but it couldn't be their primary focus because they were in a three-touchdown hole very early in that football game. So it was much more of a balance, much more of a mix offensively with Cousins having to throw the football, and he served him up to the Packers a couple of times. He made some bad throws, especially that interception at the end of the football game. The bad throw we talked about. You know, the situation itself warranted that he do something else, and he made the absolute wrong decision. So that's the kind of thing that we want to set up for Kirk Cousins to be able to do that for us on Sunday. So those would be the keys to the Bears being victorious on Sunday. We want to cut down on the mistakes on offense, cut back on the penalties on defense, therefore giving the Vikings more opportunities that they didn't necessarily earn, and then getting the offense getting the rhythm established on offense. Like I said, even if we're not coming away with points, We've been out on the field. We've taken 3-4 minutes off the clock. We've gotten a couple of first downs. We're keeping our defense fresh. I mean, that, I think, it will be paramount to the Bears being successful and to the Bears being able to plow through in the fourth quarter and walk away with this thing. So, anyway, guys, I think that will do it for the Week 4 preview episode of the Bears Talk Underground. Quick note, I realized that I made a mistake with my edit this week. I played the fourth quarter knee-jerk reaction twice. I don't know if I played it in place of the third quarter knee-jerk reaction or however that happened, but just a quick insight into what's going on there. The audio program that I have used literally for years, this old program, it's been glitching on me lately. I need to get a new audio program, basically. And what happens is while I'm recording, it will choke up a little bit. It will, you know, like say like I'm talking right now and I'll look at my screen as the, you know, the little wave file kind of forms in front of me. But you'll see nothing happen for a few seconds, and then all of a sudden you'll see it jump ahead, and it'll look like it recorded everything that I said. But if you go back and listen to it, it sounds like there's a jump cut in there because it just, like, it wasn't recording while it was buffering, and then it started recording when it was done. So what I've started to do was actually I use a different program to record my audio now, but I'm using the old program to edit it. So I'm basically putting, you know, making all the puzzle pieces in one program and then putting them together in the old one. And I screwed up on Monday or Tuesday night. Yeah. So anyway, that's how that happened. And I'm going to do a better job of keeping an eye on that for you guys. So anyway, I don't know why I felt the need to tell you that, guys. I don't know. I just wanted to. Quite a few of you reached out to me about that mistake. Even my dad called me up and be like, what's the deal with the fourth quarter knee-jerk reaction being in there twice? I'm like, ah, crap. So that's what happened. I didn't do it on purpose, obviously. But, yeah, so I'm working on that. And I think once I learn how to edit in the new program, maybe I'll just use that one exclusively. But until I do, I'll be doing it this way. So I'll just have to do a better job of keeping my eye on what pieces I'm putting together or maybe labeling them a bit better so that I don't make the same mistake again. So anyway, that's going to do it for the Week 4 review episode or preview episode of the Bears Talk Underground. I will be back on Tuesday. So recording on Monday night for the show to drop on Tuesday morning, first thing. And talking about this, hopefully it's another Victory Monday for us as we head into the big week in the UK. A lot of my UK listeners very excited about the Bears making the trip across the pond, coming to them. A lot of them posting that, you know, them receiving their tickets, posting those pictures on Facebook and things like that. Hopefully you guys have a great time and our beloved can give you a victory. So we'll have your boy Q from Locked On Raiders on next week to preview that. So that should be fun as well. So anyway, like I said, come back Tuesday morning. That's when the show is going to drop for the Week 4 review. How did this game between the Bears and the Vikings turn out? Do we have a piece of first place? Are we still at the bottom looking up at everyone else? So come back on Tuesday and find out. And until then, my name is Larry D, and this has been Bears Talk Underground.